The Dragon Reborn by Robert Jordan. This book is read by Michael Kramer and Kate Redding. Part 1. And his paths shall be many, and who shall know his name? For he shall be born among us many times, in many guises, as he has been and ever will be, time without end. His coming shall be like the sharp edge of the plow, turning our lives in furrows from out of the places where we lie in our silence. The breaker of bonds, the forger of chains, the maker of futures, the unshaper of destiny. From Commentaries on the Prophecies of the Dragon by Jurith Doreen, right hand to the Queen of Almorin, 742 A.B., the Third Age. Prologue. Fortress of the Light. Pedron Niles' aged gaze wandered about his private audience chamber, but dark eyes hazed with thought saw nothing. Tattered wall hangings, once battle banners of the enemies of his youth, faded into dark wood paneling laid over stone walls, thick even here in the heart of the Fortress of the Light. The single chair in the room, heavy, high-backed, and almost a throne, was as invisible to him as the few scattered tables that completed the furnishings. Even the white-cloaked man kneeling with barely restrained eagerness on the great sunburst set in the wide planks of the floor had vanished from Niall's mind for the moment, though few would have dismissed him so lightly. Jarrett Byer had been given time to wash before being brought to Niall, but both his helmet and his breastplate were dulled from travel and battered from use. Dark, deep-set eyes shone with a feverish, urgent light in a face that seemed to have had every spare scrap of flesh boiled away. He wore no sword, none was allowed in Niall's presence, but he seemed poised on the edge of violence, like a hound awaiting the loosing of the leash. Twin fires on long hearths at either end of the room held off the late winter cold. It was a plain soldier's room, really. Everything well made, but nothing extravagant, except for the sunburst. Furnishings came to the audience chamber of the Lord Captain Commander of the Children of the Light with the man who rose to the office. The flaring sun of coined gold had been worn smooth by generations of petitioners, replaced and worn smooth again. Gold enough to buy any estate in Amadicia, and the patent of nobility to go with it. For 10 years, Niall had walked across that gold and never thought of it twice, any more than he thought of the sunburst embroidered across the chest of his white tunic. Gold held little interest for Pedron Niall. Eventually, his eyes went back to the table next to him, covered with maps and scattered letters and reports. 3 loosely rolled drawings lay among the jumble. He took one up reluctantly. It did not matter which. All depicted the same scene, though by different hands. Niall's skin was as thin as scraped parchment, drawn tight by age over a body that seemed all bone and sinew, but there was nothing of frailty about him. No man held Niall's office before his hair was white, nor did any man softer than the stones of the Dome of Truth. Still, he was suddenly aware of the tendon-ridged back of the hand holding the drawing, aware of the need for haste. Time was growing short. His time was growing short. It had to be enough. He had to make it enough. He made himself unroll the thick parchment halfway, just enough to see the face that interested him. The chalks were a little smudged from travel and saddlebags, but the face was clear. A gray-eyed youth with reddish hair. He looked tall, but it was hard to say for certain. Aside from the hair and the eyes, he could have been set down in any town without exciting comment.
This boy has proclaimed himself the Dragon Reborn, Niall muttered.
The Dragon. The name made him feel the chills of winter and age. The name borne by Luz Theron Telamon, when he doomed every man who could channel the one power, then or ever after, to insanity and death, himself among them. It was more than 3,000 years since Aes Sedai Pride and the War of the Shadow had brought an end to the Age of Legends. 3,000 years, but prophecy and legend help men remember. The heart of it, at least, if the details were gone. Luz Theron Kinslayer, the man who had begun the breaking of the world, when madmen who could tap the power that drove the universe leveled mountains and sank ancient lands beneath the seas, when the whole face of the earth had been changed, and all who survived fled like beasts before a wildfire. It had not ended until the last male Aes Sedai lay dead, and a scattered human race could begin trying to rebuild from the rubble, where even rubble remained. It was burned into memory by the stories mothers told children, and prophecy said the dragon would be born again. Niall had not really meant it for a question, but Bayar took it for one. "Yes, my lord Captain Commander, he has. It is a worse madness than any false dragon I've ever heard of. Thousands have declared for him already. Taraban and Ar-Adoman are in civil war, as well as at war with each other. There is fighting all across Almuth Plain and Toman Head, Tarabaner against Domani, against Dark Friends, crying for the dragon. Or there was fighting until winter chilled most of it. I've never seen it spread so quickly, my lord Captain Commander. Like throwing a lantern into a hay barn. The snow may have damped it down, but come spring, the flames will burst out hotter than before." Niall cut him off with a raised finger. Twice already Niall had let him tell his story through, his voice burning with anger and hate. Parts of it Niall knew from other sources, and in some areas, he knew more than Bayar. But each time he heard it, it goaded him anew.
"Jefram Bornhald and 1,000 of the children dead. And Aes Sedai did it. You have no doubts, Child Bayar?"
"None, my lord Captain Commander. After a skirmish on the way to Falma, I saw 2 of the Tarvalan witches. They cost us more than 50 dead before we stuck them full of arrows."
"You are sure? Sure they were Aes Sedai?"
"The ground erupted under our feet."
Bayar's voice was firm and full of belief. He had little imagination, did Jarrett Bayar. Death was part of a soldier's life, however it came.
"Lightnings struck our ranks out of a clear sky. My lord Captain Commander, what else could they have been?"
Niall nodded grimly. There had been no male Aes Sedai since the breaking of the world. But the women who still claimed that title were bad enough. They prated on their 3 oaths, to speak no word that was not true, to make no weapon for one man to kill another, to use the one power as a weapon only against Dark Friends or Shadow Spawn. But now they had showed those oaths for the lies they were. He'd always known no one could want the power they wielded except to challenge the Creator, and that meant to serve the Dark One.
"And you know nothing of those who took Falma and killed half of one of my legions?"
"Lord Captain Bornhold said they called themselves Shonchan, my lord Captain Commander,"
Bayar said stolidly.
"He said they were Dark Friends, and his charge broke them, even if they killed him."
His voice gained intensity.
"There were many refugees from the city. Everyone I spoke to agreed the strangers had broken and fled. Lord Captain Bornhold did that."
Niall sighed softly. They were almost the same words Bayar had used the first 2 times about the army that had seemingly come out of nowhere to take Falma.
"A good soldier," Niall thought. "So Jefram Bornhold always said. But not a man to think for himself."
"My lord Captain Commander," Bayar said suddenly. "Lord Captain Bornhold did command me to stand aside from the battle. I was to watch and report to you. And tell his son, Lord Dayan, how he died."
"Yes, yes,"
Niall said impatiently. For a moment he studied Bayar's hollow-cheeked face, then added,
"No one doubts your honesty or courage. It is exactly the sort of thing Jefram Bornhold would do, facing a battle in which he feared his entire command might die."
"And not the sort of thing you have imagination enough to think up." There was nothing more to learn from the man.
"You have done well, Child Bayar. You have my leave to carry word of Jefram Bornhold's death to his son. Dayan Bornhold is with Eamon Valda, near Tarvalan at last report. You may join them."
"Thank you, my lord Captain Commander. Thank you." Baia rose to his feet and bowed deeply. Yet as he straightened, he hesitated.
My lord Captain Commander, we were betrayed.
Hatred gave his voice a saw-toothed edge.
By this one dark friend you spoke of, Child Baiar.
He could not keep an edge out of his own voice. A year's planning lay in ruins amid the corpses of 1,000 of the children, and Baiar wanted to talk only of this one man.
This young blacksmith you've only seen twice? This Perrin from the Two Rivers?
Yes, my lord Captain Commander. I do not know how, but I know he is to blame. I know it.
I will see what can be done about him, Child Baiar.
Baiar opened his mouth again, but Niall raised a thin hand to forestall him.
You may leave now.
The gaunt-faced man had no choice but to bow again and leave. As the door closed behind him, Niall lowered himself into his high-backed chair. What had brought on Baiar's hatred of this Perrin? There were far too many dark friends to waste energy on hating any particular one. Too many dark friends, high and low, hiding behind glib tongues and open smiles, serving the Dark One. Still, one more name added to the lists would do no harm. He shifted on the hard chair, trying to find comfort for his old bones. Not for the first time he thought vaguely that perhaps a cushion would not be too much luxury. And not for the first time he pushed the thought away. The world tumbled toward chaos, and he had no time to give in to age. He let all the signs that foretold disasters swirl through his mind. War gripped Taraban and Ar-Adaman. Civil war ripped at Kyrian, and war fever was rising in Tyr and Ilion, old enemies as they were. Perhaps these wars meant nothing in themselves. Men fought wars. But they usually came one at a time. And aside from the false dragon somewhere on Almuth Plain, another tore at Saldaea, and a third plagued Tyr. Three at once. They must all be false dragons. They must be. A dozen small things besides, some perhaps only baseless rumors, but taken together with the rest, sightings of Aiel reported as far west as Mirundi and Kandor, only two or three in one place, but one or 1,000, Aiel had come out of the waste just once in all the years since the breaking. Only in the Aiel War had they ever left that desolate wilderness. The Atha'an Mier, the sea folk, were said to be ignoring trade to seek signs and portents. Of what exactly, they did not say. Sailing with ships half full or even empty. Ilion had called the Great Hunt of the Horn for the first time in almost 400 years, had sent out the hunters to seek the fabled Horn of Valir, which prophecy said would summon dead heroes from the grave to fight in Tarmangaidan, the last battle against the Shadow. Rumors said the Ogier, always so reclusive that most common people thought them only legend, had called meetings between their far-flung steading. Most telling of all, to Niall, the Aes Sedai had apparently come into the open. It was said they had sent some of their sisters to Saldaea to confront the false dragon, Mazrim Teim. Rare as it was in men, Teim could channel the One Power. That was a thing to fear and despise in itself, and few thought a man like that could be defeated except with the aid of Aes Sedai. Better to allow Aes Sedai help than to face the inevitable horrors when he went mad, as such men inevitably did. But Tarvalin had apparently sent other Aes Sedai to support the other false dragon at Falma. Nothing else fit the facts. The pattern chilled the marrow in his bones. Chaos multiplied, what was unheard of, happening again and again. The whole world seemed to be milling, stirring near the boil. It was clear to him, the last battle really was coming. All his plans were destroyed, the plans that would have secured his name among the Children of the Light for 100 generations. But turmoil meant opportunity, and he had new plans, with new objectives, if he could keep the strength and will to carry them out.
Light, let me hold on to life long enough.
A deferential knock on the door brought him out of his dark thoughts.
Come,
he snapped. A servant in coat and breeches of white and gold bowed his way in.
Eyes to the floor, he announced that Jakim Karadin, anointed of the light, inquisitor of the hand of the light, came at the command of the Lord Captain Commander. Karadin appeared in the man's heels, not waiting for Niall to speak. Niall gestured the servant to leave. Before the door was fully closed again, Karadin dropped to one knee with a flourish of his snowy cloak. Behind the sunburst on the cloak's breast lay the scarlet shepherd's crook of the Hand of the Light, called the Questioner's by many, though seldom to their faces.
"As you have commanded my presence, my Lord Captain Commander," he said in a strong voice, "so have I returned from Taraban."
Niall examined him for a moment. Karadin was tall, well into his middle years, with a touch of gray in his hair, yet fit and hard. His dark, deep-set eyes had a knowing look about them, as always. And he did not blink under the silent study of the Lord Captain Commander. Few men had consciences so clear or nerves so steady. Karadin knelt there, waiting as calmly as if it were an everyday matter to be ordered curtly to leave his command and return to Amador without delay, no reasons given. But then it was said Jakim Karadin could outweigh a stone.
"Rise, child Karadin."
As the other man straightened, Niall added,
"I have had disturbing news from Falma."
Karadin straightened the folds of his cloak as he answered. His voice rode the edge of suitable respect, almost as if he spoke to an equal, rather than to the man he had sworn to obey to the death.
"My Lord Captain Commander refers to the news brought by Child Jarrett Bayar, late second to the Lord Captain Bornholt."
The corner of Niall's left eye fluttered, an old presage of anger. Supposedly, only three men knew Bayar was in Amador, and none besides Niall knew from where he came.
"Do not be too clever, Karadin. Your desire to know everything may one day lead you into the hands of your own questioners."
Karadin showed no reaction beyond a slight tightening of his mouth at the name.
"My Lord Captain Commander, the Hand seeks out truth everywhere to serve the light."
To serve the light, not to serve the children of the light. All the children served the light, but Pedro and Niall often wondered if the questioners really considered themselves part of the children at all.
"And what truth do you have for me about what occurred in Falma?"
"Dark friends, my Lord Captain Commander."
"Dark friends?"
Niall's chuckle held no amusement.
"A few weeks gone, I was receiving reports from you that Jefram Bornhold was a servant of the Dark One because he moved soldiers onto Toman Head against your orders."
His voice became dangerously soft.
"Do you now mean me to believe that Bornhold, as a Dark Friend, led 1,000 of the children to their deaths fighting other Dark Friends?"
"Whether or not he was a Dark Friend will never be known," Karadin said blandly, "since he died before he could be put to the question. The Shadow's plots are murky and often seem mad to those who walk in the light. But that those who seized Falma were Dark Friends, I have no doubt. Dark Friends and Aes Sedai in support of a false dragon. It was the one power that destroyed Bornhold and his men. Of that I am sure, my Lord Captain Commander. Just as it destroyed the armies that Taraban and Arad-Doman sent against the Dark Friends in Falma."
"And what of the stories that those who took Falma came from across the Arith Ocean?"
Karadin shook his head.
"My Lord Captain Commander, the people are full of rumors. Some claim they were the armies Otter Hawkwing sent across the ocean 1,000 years ago come back to claim the land. Why, some even claim to have seen Hawkwing himself in Falma, and half the heroes of legend besides. The West is boiling from Taraban to Saldaea, and 100 new rumors bubble to the surface every day, each more outrageous than the last. These so-called Shon Chan were no more than another rabble of Dark Friends gathered to support a false dragon, only this time with open Aes Sedai support."
"What proof have you?"
Niall made his voice sound as if he doubted the point.
"You have prisoners?"
"No, my Lord Captain Commander. As Child Bayar no doubt told you, Bornhold managed to hurt them badly enough that they dispersed. And certainly no one we've questioned would admit to supporting a false dragon. As for proof,
It lies in two parts. If my Lord Captain Commander will permit me.
Niall gestured impatiently.
The first part is negative. Few ships have tried to cross the Arith Ocean, and most never returned. Those that did turned back before they ran out of food and water. Even the sea folk will not cross the Arith, and they sail wherever there is trade, even to the lands beyond the Isle Waste. My Lord Captain Commander, if there are any lands across the ocean, they are too far to reach, the ocean too wide. To carry an army across it would be as impossible as flying.
Perhaps, Niall said slowly. It is certainly indicative. What is your second part?
My Lord Captain Commander, many of those we questioned spoke of monsters fighting for the Dark Friends, and held to their claims even under the last degree of the question. What could they be but Trollocs and other shadow spawn, in some way brought down from the Blight?
Carradine spread his hands as if that were conclusive.
Most people think Trollocs are only travelers' tales and lies, and most of the rest think they were all killed in the Trolloc Wars. What other name would they put to a Trolloc but monster?
Yes. Yes, you may be right, Child Carradine. Maybe, I say.
He would not give Carradine the satisfaction of knowing he agreed. Let him work a while.
But what of him?
He indicated the rolled drawings. If he knew Carradine, the Inquisitor had copies in his own chambers.
How dangerous is he? Can he channel the One Power?
The Inquisitor merely shrugged.
Perhaps he can channel, perhaps not. Aes Sedai could no doubt make people believe a cat could channel if they wanted to. As to how dangerous he is, any false dragon is dangerous until he is put down, and one with Tarvalin openly behind him is 10 times dangerous. But he is less dangerous now than he will be in half a year unchecked. The captives I questioned had never seen him, had no idea where he is now. His forces are fragmented. I doubt there are more than 200 gathered in any one place. The Tarabanners or the Damani, either one could sweep them away if they weren't so busy fighting each other.
Even a false dragon, Niall said dryly, is not enough to make them forget 400 years of squabbling over possession of Almuth Plain, as if either of them ever had the strength to hold it.
Carradine's face did not change, and Niall wondered how he could keep so calm.
You will not be calm much longer, questioner.
It is of no import, my Lord Captain Commander. Winter keeps them all in their camps, except for scattered skirmishes and raids. When the weather warms enough for troops to move. Bornhold took only half his legion to their deaths on Toman Head. With the other half, I will hunt this false dragon to his death. A corpse is not dangerous to anyone.
And if you face what seems Bornhold faced, Aes Sedai, channeling the power to kill.
Their witchery doesn't protect them from arrows or a knife in the dark. They die as quickly as anyone else.
Carradine smiled.
I promise you I will be successful before summer.
Niall nodded. The man was confident now.
Sure, the dangerous questions would already have come, if they were coming.
You should have remembered, Carradine. I was accounted a fine tactician.
Why, he said quietly, did you not take your own forces to Falma? With Dark Friends on Toman Head, an army of them holding Falma, why did you try to stop Bornhold?
Carradine blinked, but his voice remained steady.
At first they were only rumors, my Lord Captain Commander. Rumors so wild no one could believe. By the time I learned the truth, Bornhold had joined the battle. He was dead and the Dark Friends scattered. Besides, my task was to bring the light to Almuth Plain. I could not disobey my orders to chase after rumors.
Your task, Niall said, his voice rising as he stood.
Carradine topped him by a head, but the Inquisitor stepped back.
Your task. Your task was to seize Almuth Plain. An empty bucket that no one holds except by words and claims,
and all you had to do was fill it. The nation of Almuth would have lived again, ruled by the Children of the Light, with no need to pay lip service to a fool of a king. Amadisia and Almuth, a vice gripping Taraban. In 5 years, we would have held sway there as much as here in Amadisia. And you made a dog's dinner of it.
The smile went at last.
My lord, Captain Commander, Cardin protested. How could I foresee what happened? Yet another false dragon? Taraban and Arad-Daman finally going to war after so long, merely growling at each other? And Aes Sedai revealing their true selves after 3,000 years of dissembling? Even with that, though, all is not lost. I can find and destroy this false dragon before his followers unite. And once the Tarabaners and Domani have weakened themselves, they can be cleared from the plain without...
No! Niall snapped. Your plans are done with, Caradin. Perhaps I should hand you over to your own questioners right now.
The High Inquisitor would not object. He is gnashing his teeth to find someone to blame for what happened. He would never put forward one of his own, but I doubt he'd quibble if I named you. A few days under the question and you would confess to anything. Name yourself Darkfriend, even. You would go under the headsman's axe inside a week.
There was sweat beating on Caradin's forehead.
My lord, Captain Commander.
He stopped to swallow.
My lord, Captain Commander, seems to be saying there is another way. If he will but speak it, I am sworn to obey.
Now, Niall thought, now to toss the dice.
Prickles ran across his skin as if he were in battle and had suddenly realized that every man for 100 paces around him was an enemy. Lord Captain Commanders do not go to the headsman, but more than one had been known to die suddenly and unexpectedly, swiftly mourned and swiftly replaced by men with less dangerous ideas.
Child Caradin, he said firmly, you will make certain that this false dragon does not die. If any Aes Sedai come to oppose rather than support him, you will make use of your knives in the dark.
The Inquisitor's jaw dropped. Yet he recovered quickly, eyeing Niall in a speculative fashion.
To kill Aes Sedai is a duty, but to allow a false dragon to roam free? That would be treason and blasphemy.
Niall drew a deep breath. He could sense the unseen knives waiting in the shadows. But he was committed now.
It is no treason to do what must be done. And even blasphemy can be tolerated for a cause.
Those two sentences alone were enough to kill him.
Do you know how to unite people behind you, Child Caradin? The quickest way? No? Loose a lion. A rabid lion in the streets. And when panic grips the people, once it has turned their bowels to water, calmly tell them you will deal with it. Then you kill it and order them to hang the carcass up where everyone can see. Before they have time to think, you give another order, and it will be obeyed. And if you continue to give orders, they will continue to obey, for you will be the one who saved them. And who better to lead?
Caradin moved his head uncertainly.
Do you mean to take it all, my lord Captain Commander? Not just Almuth Plain, but Taraban and Arad-Daman as well?
What I mean is for me to know. It is for you to obey as you are sworn to do. I expect to hear of messengers on fast horses leaving for the plain by tonight. I am certain you know how to word the orders so no one suspects what they should not. If you must harry someone, let it be the Tarabaners and Domani. It would not do to have them kill my lion. No, under the light, we shall force peace between them.
As my lord Captain Commander commands, Caradin said smoothly, I hear and obey.
Too smoothly. Niall smiled a cold smile.
In case your oath is not strong enough, know this. If this false dragon dies before I command his death, or if he is taken by the Tarvalan witches, you will be found one morning with a dagger in your heart,
and should any accident befall me, even if I should die of old age, you will not survive me the month.
My lord Captain Commander, I have sworn to obey.
So you have, Niall cut him off. See that you remember it. Now go,
as my lord Captain Commander commands.
This time Cardan's voice was not so steady. The door closed behind the Inquisitor. Niall rubbed his hands together. He felt cold. The dice were spinning with no way of telling what pips would show when they stopped. The last battle truly was coming. Not the Tarmengaden of legend, with a Dark One breaking free to be faced by the Dragon Reborn. Not that, he was sure. The Aes Sedai of the Age of Legends might have made a hole in the Dark One's prison at Sheol Ghul, but Luce Theron Kinslayer and his 100 companions had sealed it up again. The counterstroke had tainted the male half of the true source forever and driven them mad, and so begun the breaking. But one of those ancient Aes Sedai could do what 10 of the Tarvalen witches of today could not. The seals they had made would hold. Pedron Nile was a man of cold logic, and he had reasoned out how Tarmengaden would be. Bestial Trolloc hordes rolling south out of the Great Blight as they had in the Trolloc Wars 2,000 years before, with the Murdral, the Halfmen, leading, and perhaps even new human dreadlords from among the Dark Friends. Humankind, split into nations squabbling among themselves, could not stand against that. But he, Pedron Nile, would unite humankind behind the banners of the Children of the Light. There would be new legends to tell how Pedron Nile had fought Tarmengaden and won. First, he murmured, loose a rabid lion in the streets. A rabid lion? Nile spun on his heel as a bony little man with a huge beak of a nose slipped from behind one of the hanging banners. There was just a glimpse of a panel swinging shut as the banner fell back against the wall. I showed you that passage, Ordeath, Nile snapped, so you could come when I summoned you without half the fortress knowing. Not so you could listen to my private conversation. Ordeath made a smooth bow as he crossed the room. Listen, great lord, I would never do such a thing. I only just arrived and could not avoid hearing your final words, no more than that. He wore a half-mocking smile, but it never left his face that Nile had ever seen, even when the fellow had no reason to know anyone was watching. A month before, in the dead of winter, the gangly little man had arrived in Amadicia, ragged and half-frozen, and somehow managed to talk his way through all the layers of guards to Pedron Nile himself. He seemed to know things about events on Toman Head that were not in Cardin's voluminous, if obscure, reports, or in Byer's tale, or in any other report or rumor that had come to Nile. His name was a lie, of course. In the old tongue, Ordeath meant wormwood. When Nile challenged him on it, though, all he said was, "Who we were is lost to all men, and life is bitter." But he was clever. It had been he who helped Nile see the pattern emerging in events. Ordeath moved to the table and took up one of the drawings. As he unrolled it enough to reveal the young man's face, his smile deepened to nearly a grimace. Nile was still irritated that the man had come unsummoned. "You find a false dragon funny, Ordeath? Or does he frighten you?" "A false dragon," Ordeath said softly. "Yes. Yes, of course it must be. Who else could it be?" And he barked a shrill laugh that grated on Nile's nerves. Sometimes Nile thought Ordeath was at least half mad. But he is clever, mad or not. "What do you mean, Ordeath? You sound as if you know him." Ordeath gave a start, as though he had forgotten the Lord Captain Commander was there. "Know him? Oh, yes, I know him. His name is Randall Thor. He comes from the Two Rivers in the back country of Andor, and he is a dark friend so deep in the shadow it would make your soul cringe to know the half." "The Two Rivers," Nile mused. "Someone else mentioned another dark friend from there, another youth. Strange to think of dark friends coming from a place like that. But truly, they are everywhere.
Another great lord, Ordeath said. From the Two Rivers. Would that be Matrim Cawthon or Perrin Ibarra? They are of an age with him, and close behind in evil.
His name was given as Perrin, Niall said, frowning.
Three of them, you say?
Nothing comes out of the Two Rivers but wool and tobacco. I doubt if there is another place men live that is more isolated from the rest of the world.
In a city, dark friends must hide their nature to one extent or another. They must associate with others, with strangers come from other places, and leaving to take word of what they have seen. But in quiet villages cut off from the world, where few outsiders ever go, what better places for all to be dark friends?
How is it you know the names of three dark friends, Ordeath? Three dark friends from the far end of forever. You keep too many secrets, Wormwood, and pull more surprises from your sleeve than a gleeman.
How can any man tell all that he knows, great lord? The little man said smoothly.
It would be only prattle until it becomes useful.
I will tell you this, great lord. This Randall Thor, this dragon, has deep roots in the Two Rivers.
False dragon,
Niall said sharply, and the other man bowed.
Of course, great lord, I misspoke myself.
Suddenly Niall became aware of the drawing crumpled and torn in Ordeath's hands. Even while the man's face remained smooth, except for that sardonic smile, his hands twitched convulsively around the parchment.
Stop that,
Niall commanded. He snatched the drawing away from Ordeath and smoothed it as best he could.
I do not have so many likenesses of this man that I can allow them to be destroyed.
Much of the drawing was only a smudge, and a rip ran across the young man's breast. But miraculously, the face was untouched.
Forgive me, great lord.
Ordeath made a deep bow, his smile never slipping.
I hate dark friends.
Niall studied the face in chalks. Randall Thor of the Two Rivers.
Perhaps I must make plans for the Two Rivers. When the snow's clear, perhaps.
As the great lord wishes, Ordeath said blandly.
The grimace on Cardin's face as he strode through the halls of the fortress made other men avoid him, though in truth few sought the company of questioners. Servants hurrying about their tasks tried to fade into the stone walls, and even men with golden knots of rank on their white cloaks took side quarters when they saw his face. He flung open the door to his rooms and slammed it behind him, feeling none of the usual satisfaction at the fine carpets from Taraban and Tyr, in lush reds and golds and blues, the beveled mirrors from Ilion, the gold-leaf work on the long, intricately carved table in the middle of the floor. A master craftsman from Lugard had worked nearly a year on that. This time he barely saw it.
Shaban!
For once his body servant did not appear. The man was supposed to be readying the rooms.
The light burn you, Shaban! Where are you?
A movement caught the corner of his eye, and he turned, ready to shrivel Shaban with his curses. The curses themselves shriveled, as a murdrel took another step toward him with the sinuous grace of a serpent. It was a man in form, no larger than most, but there the resemblance ended. Dead black clothes and cloak, hardly seeming to stir as it moved, made its maggot-white skin appear ever paler, and it had no eyes. That eyeless gaze filled Caradin with fear, as it had filled thousands before.
What?
Caradin stopped to work moisture back into his mouth, to try bringing his voice back down to its normal register.
What are you doing here?
It still sounded shrill. The halfman's bloodless lips quirked in a smile.
Where there's shadow, there may I go.
Its voice sounded like a snake rustling through dead leaves.
I like to keep a watch on all those who serve me.
I serve...
It was no use. With an effort, Cardin jerked his eyes away from that smooth expanse of pale, pasty face and turned his back. A shiver ran down his spine, having his back to a murdrel. Everything was sharp in the mirror on the wall in front of him. Everything but the half-man. The murdrel was an indistinct blur. hardly soothing to look at, but better than meeting that stare. A little strength returned to Carradine's voice.
I serve the...
He cut off, suddenly aware of where he was. In the heart of the Fortress of the Light. The rumor of a whisper of the words he was about to say would have given him to the Hand of the Light. The lowest of the children would strike him down on the spot if he heard. He was alone, except for the Murdral, and perhaps Charbon. Where is that cursed man? It would be good to have someone to share the half-man's stare, even if the other would have to be disposed of afterwards. But still, he lowered his voice.
I serve the great Lord of the Dark, as you do. We both serve.
If you wish to see it so.
The Murdral laughed, a sound that made Carradine's bones shiver.
Still, I will know why you are here instead of on Almuth Plain.
I was commanded here by word of the Lord Captain Commander.
The Murdral grated.
Your Lord Captain Commander's words are dung. You were commanded to find the human called Randall Thor and kill him. That before all else, above all else. Why are you not obeying?
Carradine took a deep breath. That gaze on his back felt like a knife blade grating along his spine.
Things have changed. Some matters are not as much in my control as they were.
A harsh scraping noise jerked his head around. The Murdral was drawing a hand across the tabletop, and thin tendrils of wood curled away from its fingernails.
Nothing has changed, human. You forswore your oaths to the light and swore new oaths, and those oaths you will obey.
Carradine stared at the gouges marring the polished wood and swallowed hard.
I don't understand. Why is it suddenly so important to kill him? I thought the great Lord of the Dark meant to use him.
You question me? I should take your tongue. It is not your part to question or to understand. It is your part to obey. You will give dogs lessons in obedience. Do you understand that? Heel, dog, and obey your master.
Anger wormed its way through the fear, and Carradine's hand groped at his side, but his sword was not there. It lay in the next room now, where he had left it on going to attend Pedron Nile. The Murdral moved faster than a striking viper. Carradine opened his mouth to scream as its hand closed on his wrist in a crushing grip. Bones grated together, sending jolts of agony up his arm. The scream never left his mouth, though, for the half-man's other hand gripped his chin and forced his jaws shut. His heels rose up, and then his toes left the floor. Grunting and gurgling, he dangled in the Murdral's grasp.
Hear me, human. You will find this youth and kill him as quickly as possible. Do not think you can dissemble. There are others of your children who will tell me if you turn aside in your purpose. But I will give you this to encourage you. If this Randall Thor is not dead in a month, I will take one of your blood. A son, a daughter, a sister, an uncle. You will not know who until the Chosen has died screaming. If he lives another month, I will take another. And then another, and another. And when there is no one of your blood living except yourself, if he still lives, I will take you to Sheol Ghul itself.
It smiled.
You will be years in dying, human. You understand me now?
Carradine made a sound, half groan, half whimper. He thought his neck was going to break. With a snarl, the Murdral hurled him across the room. Carradine slammed against the far wall and slid to the rug, stunned. Face down, he lay fighting for breath.
Do you understand me, human?
I hear and obey.
Carradine managed into the carpet. There was no answer. He turned his head, wincing at the pain in his neck. The room was empty except for him. Half-men rode shadows like horses, so the legends said, and when they turned sideways, they disappeared. No wall could keep them out.
Carden wanted to weep. He levered himself up, cursing the jolt of pain from his wrist. The door opened and Charbon hurried in, a plump man with a basket in his arms. He stopped to stare at Carden.
Master, are you all right? Forgive me for not being here, Master, but I went to buy fruits for your...
With his good hand, Carden struck the basket from Charbon's hands, sending withered winter apples rolling across the carpets, and backhanded the man across the face.
Forgive me, Master, Charbon whispered.
Fetch me paper and pen and ink, Carden snarled. Hurry, fool! I must send orders.
But which? Which? As Charbon scurried to obey, Carden stared at the gouges in the tabletop and shivered. Chapter 1. Waiting. The wheel of time turns and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. Legend fades to myth, and even myth is long forgotten when the age that gave it birth comes again. In one age, called the Third Age by some, an age yet to come, an age long past, a wind rose in the mountains of mist. The wind was not the beginning. There are neither beginnings nor endings to the turning of the wheel of time, but it was a beginning. Down long valleys the wind swept, valleys blue with morning mist hanging in the air, some forested with evergreens, some bare where grasses and wildflowers would soon spring up. It howled across half-buried ruins and broken monuments, all as forgotten as those who had built them. It moaned in the passes, weather-worn cuts between peaks capped with snow that never melted. Thick clouds clung to the mountaintops so that snow and white billows seemed one. In the lowlands, winter was going or gone, yet here in the heights it held a while, quilting the mountainsides with broad white patches. Only evergreens clung to leaf or needle. All other branches stood bare, brown or gray against the rock and not yet quickened ground. There was no sound but the crisp rush of wind over snow and stone. The land seemed to be waiting, waiting for something to burst. Sitting his horse just inside a thicket of leatherleaf and pine, Perrin Ebarra shivered and tugged his fur-lined cloak closer, as close as he could, with a longbow in one hand and a great half-moon axe at his belt. It was a good axe of cold steel. Perrin had pumped the bellows the day Master Luhan had made it. The wind jerked at his cloak, pulling the hood back from his shaggy curls, and cut through his coat. He wiggled his toes in his boots for warmth and shifted on his high cantled saddle, but his mind was not really on the cold. Eyeing his five companions, he wondered if they too felt it. Not the waiting they had been sent there for, but something more. Stepper, his horse, shifted and tossed his head. He had named the dun stallion for his quick feet, but now Stepper seemed to feel his rider's irritation and impatience. I am tired of all this waiting, all this sitting while Moraine holds us as tight as tongs. Burn the Aes Sedai. When will it end? He sniffed the wind without thinking. The smell of horse predominated, and of men and men's sweat. A rabbit had gone through those trees not long since, fear powering its run, but the fox on its trail had not killed there. He realized what he was doing and stopped it. You'd think I would get a stuffed nose with all this wind. He almost wished he did have one. And I wouldn't let Moraine do anything about it either. Something tickled the back of his mind. He refused to acknowledge it. He did not mention his feeling to his companions. The other five men sat their saddles, short horse bows at the ready, eyes searching the sky above as well as the thinly treed slopes below. They seemed unperturbed by the wind flaring their cloaks out like banners. A two-handed sword hilt stuck up above each man's shoulder through a slit in his cloak. The sight of their bare heads, shaven except for topknots, made Perrin feel colder. For them, this weather was already well into spring. All softness had been hammered out of them at a harder forge than he had ever known. They were Shinarins from the borderlands up along the Great Blight, where Trolloc raids could come in any night, and even a merchant or a farmer might well have to take up sword or bow. And these men were no farmers,
but soldiers almost from birth. He sometimes wondered at the way they deferred to him and followed his lead. It was as if they thought he had some special right, some knowledge hidden from them. Or maybe it's just my friends, he thought wryly. They were not as tall as he, nor as big. Years as a blacksmith's apprentice had given him arms and shoulders to make two of most men's. But he had begun shaving every day to stop their jokes about his youth. Friendly jokes, but still jokes. He would not have them start again because he spoke of a feeling. With a start, Perrin reminded himself that he was supposed to be keeping watch, too. Checking the arrow nocked to his longbow, he peered down the valley running off to the west, widening as it fell away, the ground streaked with broad, twisted ribbons of snow, remnants of winter. Most of the scattered trees down there still clawed the sky with stark winter branches, but enough evergreens, pine and leatherleaf, fir and mountain holly, even a few towering greenwoods, stood on the slopes in the valley floor to give cover for anyone who knew how to use it. But no one would be there without a special purpose. The mines were all far to the south, or even further north. Most people thought there was ill luck in the mountains of mist. And few entered them who could avoid it. Perrin's eyes glittered like burnished gold. The tickling became an itch.
No.
He could push the itch aside, but the expectation would not go. As if he teetered on a brink. As if everything teetered. He wondered whether something unpleasant lay in the mountains around them. There was a way to know, perhaps. In places like this, where men seldom came, there were almost always wolves. He crushed the thought before it had a chance to firm.
Better to wonder. Better than that.
Their numbers were not many, but they had scouts. If there was anything out there, the outriders would find it.
This is my forge. I'll tend it, and let them tend theirs.
He could see further than the others, so he was the first to spot the rider coming from the direction of Taraban. Even to him, the rider was only a spot of bright colors on horseback, winding its way through the trees in the distance, now seen, now hidden. A piebald horse, he thought.
And not before time.
He opened his mouth to an answer. It would be a woman. Each rider before had been. When Massima suddenly muttered,
Raven,
like a curse. Perrin jerked his head up. A big black bird was quartering over the treetops no more than 100 paces away. Its quarry might have been carrion dead in the snow or some small animal, yet Perrin could not take the chance. It did not seem to have seen them, but the oncoming rider would soon be in its sight. Even as he spotted the raven, his bow came up and he drew. Fletchings to cheek, to ear, and loosed, all in one smooth motion. He was dimly aware of the slap of bowstrings beside him, but his attention was all on the black bird. Of a sudden, it cartwheeled in a shower of midnight feathers as his arrow found it, and tumbled from the sky as two more arrows streaked through the place where it had been. Bows half-drawn, the other Shinarans searched the sky to see if it had a companion.
Does it have to report? Perrin asked softly. Or does he see what it sees?
He had not meant anyone to hear, but Ragan, the youngest of the Shinarans, less than 10 years his elder, answered as he fitted another arrow to his short bow.
It has to report. To a half-man, usually.
In the borderlands, there was a bounty on ravens. No one there ever dared assume any raven was just a bird.
Light, if Heartsbane saw what the raven saw, we would all have been dead before he reached the mountains.
Ragan's voice was easy. It was a matter of every day to a Shinaran soldier. Perrin shivered, not from the cold, and in the back of his head, something snarled a challenge to the death. Heartsbane. Different names in different lands. Soulsbane and Heartfang, Lord of the Grave and Lord of the Twilight, and everywhere Father of Lies and the Dark One, all to avoid giving him his true name and drawing his attention. The Dark One often used ravens and crows, rats in the cities. Perrin drew another broadhead arrow from the quiver on his hip that balanced the axe on the other side.
That may be big as a club, Ragan said admiringly, with a glance at Perrin's bow, but it can shoot. I would hate to see what it could do to a man in armor.
The Shinarans wore only light mail now, under their plain coats, but usually they fought in armor, man and horse alike.
"Too long for horseback," Massima sneered.
The triangular scar in his dark cheek twisted his contemptuous grin even more.
"A good breastplate will stop even a pile arrow, except at close range. And if your first shot fails, the man you're shooting at will carve your guts out."
"That is just it, Massima."
Ragan relaxed a bit as the sky remained empty. The raven must have been alone.
"With this Two Rivers bow, I'll wager you don't have to be so close."
Massima opened his mouth.
"You two stop flapping your bloody tongues," Uno snapped.
With a long scar down the left side of his face and that eye gone, his features were hard, even for a Shinaran. He had acquired a painted eye patch on their way into the mountains during the autumn. A permanently frowning eye and a fiery red did nothing to make his stare easier to face.
"If you can't keep your bloody minds on the bloody task at hand, I'll see if extra flaming guard duty tonight will bloody settle you."
Ragan and Massima subsided under his stare. He gave them a last scowl that faded as he turned to Perrin.
"Do you see anything yet?"
His tone was a little gruffer than he might have used with a commander put over him by the King of Shinar or the Lord of Faldara, yet there was something in it of readiness to do whatever Perrin suggested. The Shinarans knew how far he could see, but they seemed to take it as a matter of course, that and the color of his eyes as well. They did not know everything, not by half, but they accepted him as he was, as they thought he was. They seemed to accept everything and anything. The world was changing, they said. Everything spun on the wheels of chance and change. If a man had eyes a color no man's eyes had ever been, what did it matter now?
"She's coming," Perrin said. "You should just see her now. There."
He pointed, and Uno strained forward, his one real eye squinting, then finally nodded doubtfully.
"There's bloody something moving down there."
Some of the others nodded and murmured too. Uno glared at them, and they went back to studying the sky and the mountains. Suddenly Perrin realized what the bright colors on the distant rider meant. A vivid green skirt peeking out beneath a bright red cloak.
"She's one of the traveling people," he said, startled.
No one else he had ever heard of dressed in such brilliant colors and odd combinations, not by choice. The women they had sometimes met and guided even deeper into the mountains included every sort. A beggar woman in rags struggling afoot through a snowstorm. A merchant by herself leading a string of laden pack horses. A lady in silks and fine furs with red tasseled reins on her palfrey and gold worked on her saddle. The beggar departed with a purse of silver, more than Perrin thought they could afford to give, until the lady left an even fatter purse of gold. Women from every station in life, all alone, from Taraban and Giladan, and even Amadisia. But he had never expected to see one of the Tuathuan.
"A bloody tinker?"
Uno exclaimed. The others echoed his surprise. Ragan's top knot waved as he shook his head.
"A tinker wouldn't be mixed in this. Either she's not a tinker, or she is not the one we are supposed to meet." "Tinkers," Massima growled. "Useless cowards."
Uno's eye narrowed until it looked like the pritchel hole of an anvil. With the red eye painted on his patch, it gave him a villainous look.
"Cowards, Massima," he said softly. "If you were a woman, would you have the flaming nerve to ride up here, alone and bloody unarmed?"
There was no doubt she would be unarmed if she was of the Tuathuan. Massima kept his mouth shut, but the scar on his cheek stood out tight and pale.
"Burn me if I would," Ragan said, "and burn me if you would either, Massima."
Massima hitched at his cloak and ostentatiously searched the sky. Uno snorted.
"The light send that flaming carrion eater was flaming alone," he muttered.
Slowly the shaggy brown and white mare meandered closer, picking away along the clear ground between broad snowbanks. Once the brightly clad woman stopped to peer at something on the ground, then tugged the cowl of her cloak further over her head, and heeled her mount forward in a slow walk.
"The raven," Perrin thought. "Stop looking at that bird and come on, woman. Maybe you've brought the word that finally takes us out of here, if Moraine means to let us leave before spring.
burn her.